Those four are the most important, right? Mm-hmm. Of all the cases. So it's easy to prove a universal negative, a universal affirmative. At least there's more ways to do it anyway. Mm-hmm. And so you know, Socrates and Thomas using the same form here. You know, Aristotle teaches us in the Practicums. Now, sometimes, of course, we use the if-then syllogism, right? And sometimes we use the either-or, right? For example, later on, when Thomas is showing, say, that there's no composition at all in God, right? We've gone through all the particular kinds of composition, right? So he can reason, you know, that every composition is this and this, this and this, this, and he eliminates all of them. Therefore, there's no composition in God. That's a different kind of argument, huh? And now we've got all these objections to answer. The first one says, well, God's got what? Length and width and depth and so on. The first, therefore, it should be said, that has been said above in the first question, right? That sacred scripture treats for us spiritual and divine things under the likenesses of what? Bodily things, huh? Whence, since it attributes three dimensions to God under the likeness of what? Bodily quantity. It designates his what?
Power.
Virtual quantity, huh? Mm. So that through what? Depth, huh? His power to knowing hidden things, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, we speak sometimes of the deep mind, right? Not as deep as God, but some depth, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to a shallow mind, huh? Mm-hmm. There are a lot of shallow minds in the news these days. Through altitude, right? The excellence of his power above all, right? Through longitude, the duration of his what? Being, right? Through latitude, the affection of his love for all things. They often do that for Christ on the cross, too, right? Is embracing the world, right? Okay. That's one way of understanding it. Another way is given by Dionysius in the chapter 9 of the Divine Needs. Now notice, what is the sense of the letter when you have these metaphors in Scripture?
So the sense of the letter would be false.
Well, no.
What? Wait.
But the sense of this is the thing I was worrying about. The sense of the letter, in the case of metaphor, is what the speaker intends, what the words signify, right?
Yes.
So you say, God, the Lord is a rock. The sense of the letter is not that God is a rock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you're speaking, what, metaphorically,
yeah.
And the meaning is he's my support, or he supports me, or something of this sort, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. I think I mentioned how Thomas there in the commentary on the epistles of Paul, and Paul uses a figure of speech, irony instead of metaphor, but it's also a figure of speech. And Thomas says that when you speak figuratively, the meaning of the speaker is not the meaning of the words, right? And it's the meaning of the speaker that is the sense of the, what? Letter, right? Okay. Now he's giving another one from Dionysius, right? And this goes back to what we said before, these two great minds there, Augustine and Thomas, that even in the sense of the letter, there can be more than one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or as Dionysius says in the chapter 9 of the Divine Names, through the profundity of God is understood the incomprehensibility of his essence. Huh? Okay. Through the what? Length, the procession of his power, right? Penetrating all things, huh? The long arm of the law, right? Huh? Mm-hmm. Something like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very real things. Through latitude, is what? Being extended, so to speak, over all things, right? Mm-hmm. Insofar as all things are contained under his what?
Protection.
Yeah. So, I don't know what Dionysius is doing talking about this in the Divine Names. It should be the symbolic theology is talking about this, right? But maybe it came up in some way there in the text, right? When Thomas divides the works of Dionysius, and there are some books about names that are said properly of God, and some books about names said metaphorically of God, and some ones where you another problem, the Trinity names there. Okay. Now to the second one about man being said to be the image and likeness of God. That man is said to be to the image or likeness of God, not by his body, right? Mm. But by that by which man excels the other animals. Mm. Whence in Genesis, chapter 1, verse 26, after it is said, let us make man to our image and our likeness, there is subjoined, so that he may what? Rule over, right?
Rule over.
The fish in the sea and so on. For the man excels all other animals as regards his what, reason and understanding. Whence, according to his understanding and reason, which is incorporeal, man is to the image of God, right? Men include the will there too, the intellectual part. Okay, now to the third objection, and although there's something the same in these objections in a way, right, because they're all kind of misusing the metaphors, right, but there's something kind of unique about Thomas's answer to these things, because there's something different about the metaphors. To the third, it should be said that the parts of the body, right, are attributed to God in Scripture by reason of their acts, right? Mm-hmm. It's a little different now, right? But according to a certain likeness. For just as the act of the eye is to see, whence the eye is said of God signifies his power to seeing in an understandable way, not in a sensible way, right? Mm-hmm. That reminds me of what Gregory the Great says in the Moralia, that anger disturbs the eye of the soul. What does he mean by the eye of the soul?
Reason.
Yeah. Saying anger disturbs your reason, you don't think too clearly when you're angry, huh? That's kind of a metaphor to call reason the eye of the soul. Mm-hmm. But if our reason can be called the eye of the soul, right, then God's understanding might be called metaphorically an eye too, right? Mm-hmm. Sin and likeness there. So we carry the word see actually over to understanding, right?
Mm.
See? Mm. But I don't think I really becomes a meaning of reason, right? It remains a metaphor, huh?
Mm.
Okay. Okay. Now, what about the fourth one, huh? Now here you're talking about God taking up a certain position, I guess, huh? To the fourth, it should be said that also those things which pertain to, how should you translate situm? Is that position or what?
Posture.
What?
Posture.
Posture, yeah. Yeah. They're not attributed to God except by certain likeness, as he is said to be sitting on account of his what? Immobility and what?
Authority.
And standing on account of his what?
Something.
Yeah, to fighting against, right?
Fighting against
everything
the
is opposed to him. Yeah, that makes sense, right? We stand up to, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to get in a fight there in the bar. You stand up, right? But the you have that kind of the chair there, the chair of the bishop and so on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the chair of the judge and so on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is authority and immobility, huh? Sits in that chair.